This is program C-1094, and yesterday we began a little mini-series about the relationships between the Romans and the Jews, and how that deteriorated over time until we end up with the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans in AD 70. As I said yesterday, the relationships between the Romans and the Jews, very complex. They started out as a mutual defense pact back in 160 between Judas Maccabee and the Roman Republic. And they continued in that relationship between the Hasmonean Kingdom and the Roman Republic right up until the time of King Herod the Great. The relationships between the Romans and the Jews actually reached their climax at that time because Rome considered Herod as one of their main allies in the empire. And Herod was effectively the third most powerful person in the Roman Empire during the 20s and teens of the first century BC. But then he died, and the relationships between the Jews and the Romans slowly began to deteriorate. And they really fell apart right around 66 AD, when the Roman prefect, Florus, took it into his head that because the Jewish people objected to him as their leader, that he would simply goad them until they rebelled against Rome, and then he would be there on the cutting edge of plundering the country, because Rome would come in and basically pound them and take their stuff. You remember that the Passover of 66 involved a meeting between the Jewish leadership and Prefect Florus and the legate of Syria. His name was Cestius, and he's actually the boss for Florus. The Roman leadership complained to Cestius that Florus was being very corrupt. And so Cestius said, well, he's going to quit that. He's going to start behaving himself and doing what is right by Roman law. And then Cestius went back to Antioch. And Florus, instead of fixing his misbehavior, simply plotted how he could get the Romans, or excuse me, the Jews to openly rebel. Now, one of the ways that he found to do this was in the middle of a property dispute down at Caesarea, Caesarea, down on the coast. It's the administrative capital for the Roman government in Judea, and it is also a city where there's a whole bunch of Jews living in close proximity to Gentiles. And so that's where the dispute finds its place. We know that this all happened on a Friday in the second Jewish month. So we're talking about May. The Jewish people in one neighborhood had a synagogue that had a very narrow access point. There were Gentile buildings on the walk into their property. And the Gentile owner of this access wouldn't sell it to them so that they could make it easier for their people to come to synagogue service without touching anything that would make them ceremonially unclean. So a tax collector that also was Jewish reached out to Florus and bribed him with 8 talents of silver. Now, that's a lot of money. That's a buying power of a couple of million dollars, a few million dollars. And Flores took the money, but then he didn't do anything about the property dispute, which definitely is part of his character. The following day, the Sabbath day, when the Jewish people come to that narrow access point in order to go to worship, they find an upturned water jar, clay water jar, with a dead bird laying on the top of it. And this is clearly mockery of the Jewish practice of cleansing from leprosy, because that ceremony involved a clay water jar and the sacrifice of a bird. So they were basically, whoever did this, was accusing all the Jewish people at this synagogue of being a bunch of lepers. But more pragmatically, by putting this water jar in the very narrow walkway to the synagogue, the Jewish people could not get by it in order to go to worship, because they would end up touching either the Gentile property on either side or the water jar with a dead bird on it. Either way, they'd be unclean. And so this starts some very high tension between the two sides. Now, eventually, the Roman security leader for the city comes and removes the water jar himself, making it possible for the Jewish people to go to worship. But the Jewish leaders are so upset by this and expect worse that they take their Torah scrolls, their sacred scripture scrolls, out of the synagogue and secure them at a safe place several miles outside the city. And then they send a delegation over to Sebaste, which is the ancient city of Samaria, just rebuilt by the Romans, or renamed by the Romans. And they go there to complain to Florus that this is what happened because he didn't take care of it. Well, when they talk about removing the scrolls, he arrests them for stealing the property of that synagogue. Now, this is very twisted, because there was a law on the books that no one could remove the sacred scrolls of the Jews from their repository without coming into conflict with the Roman government. It was intended to protect the Jewish faith. But now Florus twists it around and uses it to persecute the Jewish faith. That's how bad he is. Then a few days after this, he goes up to Jerusalem again, and he and his security forces go into the temple treasury and confiscate 17 talents of silver that's on deposit there. And we're talking again about several million dollars worth of buying power. And the people in Jerusalem are very upset that he's trying to do this, but his response is, Nero needs it. Now, the leadership of the Jews say, look, he's just trying to provoke us. Don't riot. Don't cause trouble, because otherwise we're going to have a problem. We need to be patient and reach out to Nero and get this guy taken out. But some of the younger people, we're talking about 20s and so, 20s, maybe early 30s, they decide to mock Florus and the taking of this money by walking around through Jerusalem with baskets saying, hey, do you have any money you want to contribute to Florus? He apparently needs it. He's in dire straits. Do you want to donate to the Florus Fund? Now, Florus found out that he was being mocked in this fashion, and so he sent soldiers in and demanded that the Roman leadership turn over to them the people doing this mocking. And when the Jewish people said, they're just young people, they don't think before they act, Florus gave permission to his soldiers to simply plunder the neighborhood in which all this was apparently happening and kill anybody that tried to resist them. By the end of that day, there were 3,600 dead men, women, and children amongst the Jews. And even many of the Jews who were Roman citizens of high social standing had been flogged and crucified in direct violation of Roman law. That's how bad it was getting. Now, on the 16th day of that month, and Josephus is the one that provides a lot of these details, and he was around during this time and was an eyewitness of many of these events. On the 16th of that month, which would have been a Sabbath day, Queen Bernice, or Queen Bernice, the sister of Agrippa II. These are grandkids of Herod the Great. Queen Bernice, who is 38, she was actually finishing a Nazarite vow period. And she was in the temple complex doing all of those things. And she was barefoot because she was going through this process. And she finds out that Florus has done this latest atrocity. So she goes up to him as a Jewish peer of his, because she is a high Roman citizen. She is a queen. She and her brother are, by Roman decree, in charge of all Jewish religious affairs. So they're supposed to be acting as a team with Florus. So she goes to Florus in that respect and tells him, you need to stop this. This is wrong. And she barely escapes with her life, because he sicks his men on her. And it's only because of her security detail that she's able to run away and lock herself in her Jerusalem palace. Now, her brother, Agrippa II, was nowhere at this time in the country. He was down in Alexandria taking care of business there. So on the following day, after Queen Bernice was assaulted, the Jewish leadership is trying to convince people grieving over those that had been killed not to riot, not to give the Roman prefect Florus any chance to act more aggressively. So Florus is kind of disappointed that he's not getting them to riot like he wants. So he orders the Jewish leadership to appear before him. And he says, this is how you guys can prove that everything is okay between you and the Roman people. I'm going to bring some more Roman soldiers up from Caesarea. And you need to welcome them. You need to welcome them as your saviors, as your protectors. And at the same time, he told the soldiers that were coming, do not acknowledge any kindness shown to you by the Jewish people. Totally blow them off. And the reason he tells them this is he wants them, by doing that, to provoke some sort of negative reaction from the crowds. Now, the Jewish leadership kind of anticipate this is what's going on. So they are begging and pleading with all of the Jewish people, when these soldiers show up here, cheer them, say hi to them, give them flowers, whatever it takes, be nice to them and show them that you're glad to see them, because otherwise Florus is going to use this against us. And so the soldiers show up. They ignore all the nice things the Jewish people do in greeting them, until finally some Jewish hothead in the crowd says something nasty, or might have thrown something. Something happened, and Florus's orders were, if one negative thing happens, light into the crowd. Start beating them. And that's exactly what happened. And a whole bunch of Jewish people were killed in the resulting stampede. Then he told his soldiers to make their way to the Antonia Tower. That's where the Herodian and Roman soldiers were already stationed. That's where they'd been for years and years and years. But the Jewish crowd, the hotheads within the Jewish crowd, were now deciding that they wanted to have vengeance on these Roman soldiers for what they did. So they get up on the rooftops along the roads, the streets of Jerusalem heading up to the Antonia Tower, and they just start pelting these Romans down below them with rocks. And apparently there's some sling stones that are tossed. There might have been some arrows shot at them. And the soldiers, of course, are having a hard time responding to that because these guys have got the high ground above them in these narrow streets. Now, meanwhile, there's another element of the Jewish people who have gone to the Antonia Tower, which is on the northwest corner of the temple complex. They share common access points. And the Romans, make sure I get this right. The Jewish people start destroying the access points between the Roman fortress of Antonia and the Jewish courtyards of the northern part of the temple complex to make sure that even if the Romans get into the Antonia Tower, they can't directly move straight into the Jewish temple courtyards. And Florus's soldiers, his new ones, apparently can't even get to the Antonia Tower at this point. And so he withdraws the forces, and he has this one passing snide comment to the Sanhedrin. He says, basically, well, I have to leave now, and I'm going to leave some Roman soldiers to protect you guys from these Jewish rioters. And then he's out of there. And Florus then sent an official accusation of rebellion to Legate Cestius up in Syria. Now, the Jewish people sent a counter report. Queen Bernice was one of the Jewish leaders that went to Antioch and told Cestius that it was not the Jewish people's fault, that it was all on Florus. And I'm sure she reported that she had been assaulted by Florus's soldiers. So Cestius decides to send his tribune, which would be his top military commander, down to Jerusalem to check it out. This tribune is to meet with King Agrippa II, who, by the way, is about 39 years old, who had just arrived back from Egypt, and to help him investigate what's happening with Florus and the Jewish people. So they tour the city, and the legate and Agrippa II both agree that Florus is the troublemaker in this. But Agrippa is quite concerned that some of the younger, more passionate Jews are going to want vengeance immediately on all the Roman soldiers that were causing this trouble, who had killed Jewish people or beaten many Jewish people. He's also concerned that there's a lot of talk among the Jewish people in Jerusalem that they ought to simply secede from the Roman Empire. That there's this independence movement that is being brought up. You know, we joined the Roman Empire back in time for the benefits that came from that. There was this mutual assistance thing that was going on. Well, that's not happening anymore. We want to be out of here. We want to get back to ruling ourselves without the Romans being involved in it. So this is the beginning of this freedom cry that is going to become part of the story as we proceed. Now, that bothered Agrippa because he felt that that would not go over well with Emperor Nero, who is only 28 years old, and who sees this all as his kingdom, his empire, and that he would see this as rebelling against him. So he gets involved in a very long speech by which he describes it is foolish to think that you Jewish people could stand up against the Roman Empire and win. So don't do it. Don't try it. And during this speech, both Agrippa and Bernice, who is there, the brother and sister team, are crying and begging the people, don't do this. Now, the people are responding by saying, we're not trying to fight against Rome. We're trying to fight against Florus. And the king and the queen say, you're not fighting against Florus. You are fighting against Rome if you do this. And you're not even paying the taxes that are supposed to be paid. Because apparently, some of the Jewish people said, well, we're not paying taxes while this is going on. We're going to hold back anything that's due to the Roman Empire because they're not taking good care of us. Agrippa and Bernice is going over this whole list. Everything that you're doing not against Florus, you're doing it against Nero. You've destroyed Nero's property when you destroyed the access points from the Antonia Tower. You have withheld Nero's just revenue when you've refused to pay taxes into the hands of the local tax collectors. And you are rebelling against Nero, not Florus. And so because he kept making this point that they should not do these things, eventually the more rebellious among the crowd start seeing Agrippa as part of the problem. And they even try to stone him. And they chase him out of the city at this point. That causes a lot of trouble for Agrippa because he wants the Jewish people to be at peace within the Roman Empire. And this is making it very difficult. Now, during the same time, because we're talking about summertime here, there was a group of Jews, part of this new independence movement, this anti-Roman movement, that went down to Masada. And they murdered all of the Roman and Herodian soldiers that were stationed there. And I do use the word murdered advisedly. They didn't attack the fortress from the outside. They actually gained entrance to it. And once they were there, supposedly by peaceful means, they killed all the Roman and Herodian soldiers. Now, the Herodian soldiers are actually Jews that work for King Agrippa II. And so they murder all of those security forces and take control of the fortress for themselves as part of their attempt to be independent from Rome. In the fifth Jewish month, which would be in August going into September, the head of temple security, which was a young man by the name of Eleazar. Now, when I say young man, I mean he's probably in his 30s. He says, we will no longer be offering sacrifices for anyone other than Jews. Now, the reason this is significant is because for centuries, the Jewish people have offered sacrifice in their temple for anyone that wishes to acknowledge God, anyone that wished to appeal to God or petition God by prayer. This actually is part of the point of the temple when you read the prayer of King Solomon, that this was going to be a place of prayer for all people, including Gentiles. And so every day in the temple, there was a sacrifice offered on behalf of Nero. Nero paid for that sacrifice. Other people of the Roman Empire had sacrifices offered there on a daily basis. Non-Jewish people who were just like tourists who had come to Judea because it was one of the showpieces of the Roman Empire. One of their experiences would be to go up to the temple, go into the temple courtyard of the Gentiles, see the magnificent structure that Herod had commissioned to be built there, and they would pay to have a sacrifice offered on their behalf. So this was a long-standing practice that Eliezer says, we're stopping it. It was so significant that when Josephus is writing his history about these events, and remember, he's right there in the middle of all of this. He is a Pharisee, so he's very conservative in his religious views, and he is actually a priest who could serve in the temple. When reporting about this event, he says, I think this is where the war actually started, is when the Jewish religious leadership refused to offer the sacrifice to God on behalf of all the Roman people who wanted to do that anymore. And so street fighting begins right around this same time, and we will have to pick up that part of the story tomorrow.